And good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is Bauer v. Eaton Corporation. Good morning, everyone. So, appellant may approach, or do we have you, sir, or Mr.?
I'm Mr. Murphy. I'm Jared Murphy. I am representing the plaintiff. I am arguing this on behalf of Vicki Stamm today. Vicki Stamm submitted the brief, and we represent John Bauer.
Okay, Mr. Murphy, good morning to you.
Good morning. All right, good morning. My name is Jared Murphy. I represent the plaintiff appellant, John Bauer. I would like, at this time, to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, but I see I have a timer right here, so I can keep that track of that myself. This is a workers' compensation case that comes before the court on plaintiff's appeal, in which we claim that the lower court made several errors, which I will get into as I explain in my argument. As brief background, plaintiff was employed as a relief operator at the defendant's company, Eaton's, which is a manufacturer that produces engine valves and gears. Plaintiff had been employed there since 1997. He does not have any college education and has no prior work experience. On September 30, 2013, Mr. Bauer was performing his duties and was lifting a trash can in what is called the hopper. While he was doing this, he felt a tear in his right shoulder. He finished working that day and went home. When he woke up, he felt a great pain in his right shoulder and went to his family care physician, Dr. Murray. Dr. Murray at this time wrote in his report that he woke up with this injury but did not note that it was a work-related injury. Dr. Murray, though, later corrected this note to state that plaintiff was injured while working. The defendant received notice of this work-related injury in November of 2013.
Dr. Murray never removed the language of saying that he woke up with that injury, though, did he, from his report?
No, he just added to the note that this was an injury sustained during work. That when I read the note, it seemed as if Dr. Murray was stating that he did wake up feeling this pain, but then the corrected note also then indicated where that injury then came from. When Dr. Murray corrected this note, the Eatons was notified of this correction in November of 2013. And at this time, it is our position that the defendant had no reason or no reasonable controversy to deny workers' compensation claims because there was no evidence indicating that there was any injury except this work-related injury. At this time, this is going through the timeline, Mr. Bauer still needed, our client still needed surgery. So through February 14 and December 26 of 2015, he had 4 different surgeries, physical therapy, and a multitude of other medical appointments to address the plaintiff's shoulder injury. Their experts and their doctor, Dr. Michael J. Morrison, finally evaluated the plaintiff for his injuries in June of 2016. The defendant, after evaluating this 30 days after, in August 2016, agreed with the compensability of the injury and paid for the February 2014 surgery and the May 17, 2015 surgery, but denied that the December 22nd surgery was reasonably related to, was connected to the workers' compensation injury.
What was the reason for that?
The reason for that was the original report wasn't clear from the defendant's experts as to whether or not there was a full or partial tear in our client's shoulder was connected to the original injury that occurred in September 2013. The December 22nd, 2015 surgery, what they found during this surgery is they tightened a screw or they removed a screw in our client's shoulder. Also, they found that there was a partial or full tear within the client's shoulder.
But they hadn't seen that full tear prior to that, is that correct?
They hadn't seen that full tear, and it is unclear whether or not the full tear was present or that whether the full tear occurred between while he was trying to rehabilitate himself. Because during this time, he was still trying to work, still doing physical therapy, and he was still having a lot of pain. So it's unclear from the medical records whether the full or partial player was there in December 22nd, 2015, or whether or not it just occurred during rehabilitation and throughout that time.
He didn't report a startling event during that time frame.
No,
that would
he did
suggest
not.
An additional injury.
No, he did not.
So your argument is it's related to
yes.
the original injury.
It is related to the original injury. And the lower court found that it was related to the original injury. The lower court also found that there wasn't reasonable controversy to deny that and awarded us a waiting to time penalty. And we are fine with that lower court's order. What we are not fine with would be the first argument I have is that the lower court erred when it failed to reimburse us, the plaintiff, for his out-of-pocket medical expenses under Gerson. Under Escobar, when an employee in a workers' compensation case presents evidence of medical expenses resulting from injury, he or she has made a prima facie case of fairness and reasonableness, causing the burden to shift to the employer to induce evidence that the expenses are not fair and reasonable. We provided uncontroverted evidence.
The workers' compensation court found that they had ordered you to present more evidence or stipulate with the other party. Prior to the deliberations being completed, what information did the appellant submit in addition at that direction of the court?
We submitted another Excel sheet documenting exactly what the expenses were, when they occurred, where they could be found in the record, and how much they cost the appellant. It is not in the record because that, I guess it was a demonstrative exhibit, was never it was just sort of submitted to the judge as a demonstrative exhibit, but it's not in the record as of now. It matches similarly, though, if you look through the record, Exhibit 14, which is a medical record of exactly put together by the appellant's wife of out-of-pocket medical expenses that were paid by the plaintiff. So basically, the court found that, yes, that there was a surgery, yes, that there was a workers' compensation compensable injury, but no, that our client was not entitled to any medical expenses.
You said an Excel spreadsheet as in a computer spreadsheet.
As in a computer spreadsheet.
Not Excel brand physical therapy.
No, not Excel brand physical therapy. I can clarify that. But no, we put together a spreadsheet, and the court found that we did not present evidence, but it's our argument that we did present evidence to clarify. And the issue being that what happened with this case was that it was drug out. We finally got to court in 2017. It was 4 years between the injury and the finally having the trial. And between that time, there are many different medical bills. Sometimes insurance approved claims, sometimes it wasn't. They were taken to collections multiple times. And so what was paid out of pocket and what wasn't paid out of pocket and what was paid by insurance and what was paid by workers' compensation was very complicated. So we presented all of the evidence we could and we tried to simplify it as best we could, but the court found that we didn't reach our burden.
Was there some medical expense from before the injury that was included in that spreadsheet?
Yes, there was. There was a few things that were included, but very little. There was a couple things in July of 2013 that were included. That I think there was three charges, and then also there was a Tramadol injury or a prescription for Tramadol after the injury that was never confirmed in any of the medical reports. It's our position that the Tramadol itself was obviously for pain. For some reason, none of the medical records explain exactly why that was there, but still, even if that itself, the court finds that we didn't wasn't reasonable and necessary, the other medical expenses are reasonable and necessary. But I would move on before that. Also, we feel like we are entitled to a waiting time penalty. What I want the court to realize is that there was no other evidence presented to Eaton's at this time that there was any injury but a workers' compensation injury. What happened was the original injury happened, and the doctor misstated on the note that he just woke up with it, and that was in October 1st of 2013. He corrected this note subsequently afterwards. On November 22nd, 2013, the Eatons contacted the plaintiff's doctor to figure out exactly why he changed the note. Dr. Murray never changed his story. It was a work injury, workers' compensation injury. Well, they still disputed it, and finally
Is there anything in the record that shows that Dr. Murray explained to Eaton that, hey, this wasn't a discrepancy, I thought this was an injury all along?
There is a note from Eaton's to Dr. Murray asking him to explain exactly why. Otherwise, besides that, off the top of my head, I cannot remember if what was said between Dr. Murray and Eaton's. But there is no.
So there's no. Is there any way for us to know that Dr. Murray clarified? Assume that the report is ambiguous because you have one statement saying I just woke up with it. Mr. Bauer just woke up with this, and one saying it was an injury. Mm-hmm. We don't have anything from him where he clarified that ambiguity.
Our position is when he clarified the ambiguity on that second note when he made that correction. It's just to us it was a sentence left out that originally should have been there.
We don't have anything beyond that note.
No, I do not. Off the top of my head, I cannot remember that. But with our testimony from our client and the appellant and our medical records, we believe that. It clearly shows that there was no reasonable controversy. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. All 18 seconds. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it Mr. Lund?
Yes, Sean.
Good morning to you.
Good morning to you as well. Grab some water before we get going here. Had a nice drive-in from Des Moines, so not a lot of stops tonight.
You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael Lund, and I'm here today to represent Eaton and Old Republic Insurance Company in the workers' compensation claim against John Bauer that is now on appeal. How I'd like to present this today is that the case in front of you comes with around 8 issues, 10 if you count our cross appeal. It really boils down to 3 basic arguments, and that being the first one, claimant was untimely, unresponsive, and unorganized with respect to the medical and temporary disability files that were provided to the court and unresponsive to the court. There is only one expert medical opinion in the record that passes the workers' compensation rule 10, and as such should be the only expert medical opinion providing any sort of weight in this hearing. And lastly, the court is without jurisdiction to adjudicate 2 of the issues presented, and that's whether or not the court can hear the short-term and long-term disability benefits arguments, as well as the wrongful termination claim. Circling back to the initial injury, or the initial argument, which is that claimant was untimely and unresponsive, it was discussed just moments ago with respect to the medical records that the burden of proof is on the claimant to prove those medical records where medical treatment was provided and needs to be reimbursed by defendants. In the pretrial motions, both the first and the second amendment, or a second amended pretrial memorandums, claimant was asked to provide a number of responses regarding the date when the medical records happened and what they were for and what amount they were seeking for reimbursement. They submitted very little, if any, clarification on that for the second joint amendment. And
what is missing?
Well, the court just held that they could not decipher what was owed, given the fact that different benefits were owed from the first to the second, and then what was provided in exhibits at trial. The court ruled that they could not decipher what was owed. After trial, they reached out to claimant's attorney and requested additional documentation regarding the medical benefits owed, as well as temporary total disability benefits were owed.
Didn't the court reach out to both parties, ask for a stipulation?
That is correct. It was sent out to both parties. Claimant did not provide any additional follow-up prior to the, I believe it was October 12th deadline. The court reached back out to both parties and asked for follow-up, and neither party provided any clarity for the October 20th deadline, I think
Mr.
it was.
Murphy seemed to indicate that there was a spreadsheet provided that would assist the court. Is that correct?
Spreadsheets were provided. They were not admitted into evidence. The spreadsheets that were provided did not discuss individually what was owed
when it was developed, who it was owed to, and what the amount was. And the Judge Stein touched on that when he said that he could not decipher what was actually owed given what was provided to the court.
Is that spreadsheet in our record?
Your spreadsheet is not in your record.
What was the appellee's response to the court's order?
I'm sorry?
What was the appellee's response to the court's order to provide more information?
The defendants in this matter felt that the medical records that are the medical bills and everything that was provided were provided between the two parties, and that since it was claimant's burden to prove the medical records or medical treatment that was owed for reimbursement, they were in the best position to provide those medical benefits, especially considering the fact that this case was denied for a substantial period of time. Claimant would have been in the best situation to have those medical bills present.
So no response was given?
No response was given by the appellees, no. Similar with the temporary total disability benefits, the court asked for them to provide what sort of benefits they were looking for, whether that was permanent, partial, total temporary disability, and the like. And the only response that claimant gave was a very vague statement regarding how long the plaintiff was off work for and that Blue Cross Blue Shield had provided some benefits. There was no follow-up to that until the appellate, the briefs were submitted, and at which point they provided three different dates. They still did not express what benefits they were looking for at that period of time, and the court ruled that the last dates that were provided were post the maximum medical improvement date, so temporary total disability benefits would have been null and void at that point in time. The middle one was accepted by the court. That was the temporary total disability after claimant surgery in December of 2015. And the first one was the first dates that were provided for temporary total disability benefits that were requested were thrown out because for that period of time, claimant had returned to work in some capacity, so he was not owed temporary total disability benefits.
Let me see if I can understand, backing up just a little bit. Is your initial proposition that the appellant just failed to provide accepted evidence of the amounts owed?
Failed to
get it into evidence, or just that it wasn't tidy?
Failed to provide evidence that would meet the standards required by the court, as pointed out by Judge Stein on at least two different occasions, and requesting additional information from the parties. So to answer your question, there was evidence provided by plaintiffs regarding benefits that he felt were owed. They were not descriptive enough for the court to say what was owed, if that answers your question.
And these were demonstrative exhibits, is that right?
For the pretrial and the second amended pretrial memorandum, correct.
Thank you.
So far, all of the issues that have been discussed are issues of fact, is that right?
Correct. Moving on to the second argument, the only expert medical opinion in evidence is that of Dr. Morrison. The medical opinions that have been provided by plaintiff, and you'll have to excuse me, Dr. Kitabatake, or excuse me, not doctor, physician's assistant, Kitabatake provided plaintiff's opinion in this matter. Mr. Kitabatake is a physician's assistant. His reports do not meet Rule 10 of the Workers' Compensation Rules, which provide which reports can come in without live testimony. And it also fails to meet 48-151, providing for what qualifies as an expert medical opinion. Physician's assistants are not listed in that 48-151. And as such, Mr. Kitabatake's opinion is hearsay and lacks foundation to be considered.
Have we written on this issue?
The court has. The Workers' Compensation Court has.
Within its opinions?
Correct.
Has this court written on whether or not a PA qualifies for Rule 10?
The cases that have been cited in the appellee's brief are just the workers' compensation, saying that they do not have that ability to provide the...
Is that a question we need to reach, or is there conflicting medical testimony? I guess what I'm asking is, are there any issues in which the physician's assistant is the only opinion, or is it, if there are conflicting reports, do we need to resolve whether the PA's opinion is admissible?
The only conflicting opinion is Mr. Kitabatake provided a 15% impairment rating, and Dr. Morrison provided a 12% impairment rating. And we argued both at the trial level and as well as here that the 12% is the more accurate rating because it comes from an orthopedic surgeon who is also a associate professor at Creighton University School of Medicine.
I think what Judge Papik was asking, were there any uncontested opinions offered by the physician's assistant?
The only uncontested opinion, outside of the impairment ratings, the only other contested opinion was that of the causal relationship with the rotator cuff tear, which was touched on by plaintiff's counsel just moments ago. But essentially, both MRIs prior to that third surgery did not show a rotator cuff tear. It showed some fraying from a degenerative condition, but it did not show a tear.
The defendant's doctor did not offer an opinion.
The defendant's doctor did offer an opinion.
So there were no uncontested opinions offered by the physician's
Correct.
Assistant.
Correct. And I thank you for my time today.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 18 seconds. We will give you an entire minute, Mr. Murphy.
All right. One issue I would like to touch on was your question about whether there was any unrebutted opinions by the physician's assistant. There was one dealing with future medical expenses. It's our position that we presented evidence that he would need future, may need future injections in his shoulder. There was no, that was not touched on by their expert at all.
Dr. Morrison didn't?
No. It was not, and it was already in evidence that he's already needed two injections in his shoulder and that pain would continue. So I believe that the court should address that and whether or not it should accept APA's opinion as a proper expert testimony. Otherwise, I will rest. So.
And all of the other issues are issues of factual disputes?
I would say that it's not an issue of, there is an issue of law dispute when it comes to whether or not we met our burden. I believe we presented medical, evidence showing that our client did incur out-of-pocket medical expenses for a compensable injury. That fact's established. Now, whether or not we met our burden, would that be an issue of law for the court to decide? So that would be...
You think that it's your facts were so compelling that the judge had no other option than to rule in your favor?
Yes.
He didn't have the opportunity or the ability to assess credibility?
I don't believe he made it. He didn't say that the medical expenses, the evidence we provided wasn't credible. He just said that he was unable to decipher some of the expenses.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next case.